Good words, aren't they? I heard that song recently. It's been out for a while, but I heard it recently again, and then I heard the testimony that you heard at the beginning, which the video was made about a year ago. And so many times when we go through things, I don't know about you, I pray those prayers. God, make that situation different. But really, what we ought to pray is, God, make me different in the midst of this, whatever you want to do through me and in me. And it kind of fits with what we're talking about this morning, the song does, because we're talking about being all in. We started this series a couple of weeks ago talking about how, you know, in poker, it's when you push all your chips to the center of the table. It's when it's do or die time. You're all in. I was reading recently about Hernan Cortez, 1519. He sailed towards Mexico. I think he was in Cuba. He was going to make a settlement for his home country of Spain in Mexico. And so he left with 11 ships and 13 horses and 110 sailors and 553 soldiers. And they headed to Mexico to help colonize it for Spain. The problem is that living in Mexico upon their arrival were approximately 5 million people who had their own culture. And the odds were stacked against Cortez and his men, and he knew this. Two prior expeditions to establish a colony had met with disaster, and so he was well aware of all this. So when they landed, he made a calculated decision, and what he did is kind of gone down in history as something of epic proportions. He issued an order that turned the mission into an all-or-nothing proposition. He said, I want you to go out and burn the ships. We have no way back. We're going to cut off our way back. And so as that crew watched their ships burn and sink, they came to terms with the fact that retreat was not an option, and they were absolutely all in. 9 times out of 10 in your life and mine, I think one of the things that causes us to live out our plan B or C or D or Z, whatever plan in your life you're living, is that we make a plan B. When plan A gets too difficult, too hard, too risky, it's easy for us to bail because we got a backup plan. We got something to rely on. We've thought about this. Often it's because we didn't burn the ships that we end up bailing on the plan that maybe even that God has for our lives. Cortez and his men, it was plan A or bust. What kind of person are you? Are you a plan A or bust? Or when it comes to following Jesus, you got a lot of backup plans just in case this doesn't work. You ever heard of one-way missionaries? This term was popular around the turn of the 20th century. And it was referred to missionaries who when they sailed for their, you know, wherever they were going to go evangelize people, they bought a one-way ticket. And instead of carrying their luggage and carrying as many personal possessions as they could, they actually put all of their belongings into a coffin. Many times they would leave them there in the United States, but they would put, or if they did travel, they would travel with the coffin, with their meager, just whatever they could get in there, symbolizing that they were gonna, this was a lifetime appointment. They weren't coming back. They didn't buy a ticket that they could, you know, cash in later for a return trip. They made a commitment that this was it. It's do or die. It's plan A or bust. One of those people was a guy named A.W. Milne. He was a missionary, and he ended up as a one-way missionary to the South Pacific. The island that he was going to, he was well aware that previous missionaries who had gone there had been killed. The culture was cannibalistic, but he didn't scare him. To him, he was already dead. So he bought a one-way ticket. He packed his coffin. For 35 years, he lived on this South Pacific island. And when he died, they buried him in the middle of the village. And this is what they inscribed on his tombstone. When he came, there was no light. When he left, there was no darkness. He was all in. I don't know where, but somewhere we all started believing that God wants to send us to safe places to do easy things. We like those kinds of missions. I don't know where it is, you know, I don't know where it is that revolutionary became anything but standard. where we just play it safe all the time. Jesus didn't die to keep us safe. He died to make us dangerous. Faithfulness is not holding the fort. Faithfulness is storming the gates of hell. And the salvation of God is not some insurance policy for you and I if things go bad here. It is an offensive strategy for winning the world. The complete surrender of your life to the cause of Christ should not be something that's radical. That should be something that's normal in the body of Jesus Christ. It's time to quit living as if the purpose of heaven is to, the purpose of life is to arrive safely at death till we get ready for heaven. It's time that we go all in. I was thinking about A.W. I'm sure over the years, the 35 years that he lived there, there must have been bad days, right? There must have been difficult times. I'm sure there were times that he probably wished he'd have bought a ticket back. I'm sure there were times that he wished that he had a plan B. That had he had another option, he might have actually gone for it. Because things got tough and things got difficult and things got hard. And I wonder if he'd have had that plan B, would he have taken it? Do you have a plan B? C? D? Have you left yourself options when it comes to your relationship with God? Have you left yourself options when it comes to serving him and following him? See, in the culture we live in today, it's smart to always keep your options open, right? I mean, it's not enough that we have Home Depot. We got to have Lowe's. And oh my goodness, if we don't have a Menards, so we have three choices, what will we do for our building needs? If we only had one grocery store, if we only had Hy-Vee, if we didn't have Dillon's, I mean, what would we do if we didn't have what if there was only one kind of potato chip? Oh my goodness, we would die. We live in a world of options, and it's always good to have an option. And here's the thing. We live in a world that when things, not when things fail, but when things get hard, it's okay to bail. Did you hear about the NFL player that quit in the at halftime last week? He quit at half. He retired at halftime. That's the kind of world we live in. We live in a world where, hey, if I don't like this church, I'll just go find me a church that I like and that do things the way and tell me and tickle my ears and tell me the stuff I want and agree with me. I don't like to talk to people who disagree with me. I want to talk to people who are for me. Not, you know, if I get tired of her, if she doesn't make my favorite meal the best way, I can divorce her and get another. I can get a whole other family. I can get more kids. Well, maybe me not. But anyway, we live in a world of options, and we live in a world where it's not if things fail, it's if things get hard or I don't like it or I'm uncomfortable or whatever, I can bail and go somewhere else. And that kind of culture, when it comes to following Jesus, that's why so many times we struggle. Sometimes the thing that keeps us from being all in with God is that we haven't burned the ships. We've left our options open just in case. There's a guy in the Bible, his name is Elisha. And he had an all-in moment in the Old Testament. He didn't have any boats to burn, but he had a bonfire anyway in 1 Kings chapter 19. And Elijah was the big prophet. He was the named prophet. Everybody knew Elijah. And people were following him. And if you remember, there's a story, if you don't, in 1 Kings where Elijah gets depressed. He gets down, and so him and God go up to a mountain to have a pity party in a cave. And God talks to him there, and Elijah complains, "I'm the only one. Nobody's left but me. Nobody does the right thing but me." And God says, "You know what, silly? I've got 7,000 other people in Israel who haven't bowed a knee to the... Get back down the mountain." And he gave him a list of things to do. He said, "I want you to get back down the mountain, quit having your pity party, go back down the mountain, and here's some things I want you to do." And one of those things was to name his successor. And the successor was to be a man named Elisha. And so in 1 Kings 19, we pick up the story in verse 19. So Elijah went and found Elisha, son of Shaphat, plowing a field. And there were 12 teams of oxen in the field, and Elisha was plowing with the 12th team. And Elijah went over to him, and he threw his cloak across his shoulders, and then he walked away. And Elisha left the oxen standing there, ran after Elijah, and said to him, "First, let me go and kiss my father and mother goodbye, and then I will go with you." And Elijah replied, "Go back, but think about what I have done to you." And so Elisha returned to his oxen and slaughtered them. He used the wood from the plow to build a fire to roast their flesh. And he passed around the meat to the townspeople, and they all ate. And then he went with Elijah as his assistant. What's it take for you and I to go all in? What's it take for us to burn the ships? What's it take for us to live out our decision to follow God no matter what, without a plan B, without an option? When it gets risky and difficult and hard, how do we stay after it? Well, it's one thing it takes to go all in, if you look at Elisha's life, is that you got to think on it. Elijah, he comes up to Elisha while he's working in the field, right? And he's there working with his oxen. Elijah throws his cloak onto Elisha, and he walks away. That may be very odd to us, but in that day and age, the cloak symbolized Elijah's role, his vocation, his authority. And so by throwing his cloak onto Elisha, he's letting him know that he's calling him into service with him. Elisha's kind of caught off guard. I mean, he's out here, he's working hard, they're plowing these fields and going after it. And so when this happens, he recognized what it means. And so he goes running after Elijah. And he says, he says, hey, okay, listen, okay, I got it. You want me to come follow you, but let me go kiss my mom and my dad goodbye. Every mom and dad in here goes, oh, that's good, good boy. And then I'll go with you. And Elijah said, sure, go on back. But Elijah said, look, I've done what I'm supposed to do. Now, it's up to you. This is on you. You make the decision. Think about it. Think about what I'm asking you to do before you say yes. You decide what you're going to do. Going all in cannot just be an emotional response. We really need to think about it. We really need to consider it. We need to count the cost. One day, Jesus was talking to a bunch of people, and they were having a conversation about what does it take to follow Jesus. And this is what Jesus said in Luke 14. When it comes to following me, here's what he says. 14:28, don't begin until you count the costs. For who would begin construction of a building without first calculating the cost to see if there's enough money to finish it? Otherwise, you might complete only the foundation before running out of money, and then everyone would laugh at you. They would say, there's the person who started that building and couldn't afford to finish it. Ha, ha, ha. That's not in there. It's just my interpretation. Or what king would go to war against another king without first sitting down with his counselors to discuss whether his army of 10,000 could defeat the 20,000 soldiers marching against him? And if he can't, he'll send a delegation to discuss terms of peace while the enemy is still far away. So you cannot become my disciple without giving up everything you own. And if you're going to do that, you better think about it first. You need to count the costs. If you're going to follow Jesus, you need to, can I do this? Is this really what I want to do? Think about it. Consider it with your heart. Now, too often, I've grown up in the church, and too often what I see us do sometimes is we try to play on people's emotions to get them saved. Now, here's the thing, to get people to follow Jesus. Now, here's the thing. You cannot, when you come to Christ and you begin to follow him, it is an emotional thing. Being forgiven is an emotional thing. To know that all your sins are gone. These songs that we sung about this morning, just kind of in my own heart and life, just ratchet up the emotion of how grateful I am for what God has done. And I'm grateful for the way in which he's paid the price for me. And so being forgiven is an emotional thing. Here's the thing, though. Sometimes if we're not careful in the church, you know this as well as I do, we've preyed upon people's emotions to get them saved. When I was a kid growing up, I got saved a gazillion times based on emotion. Because basically, I was scared of hell. Anybody else scared of hell? All right. I didn't want to go to hell. And then I'll tell you what. And listen, I'm from East Texas. I grew up in East Texas, right? And I remember Scottsville Campground. It's where we had children's camp and camp meeting. And I remember being down there, open-air tabernacle, sawdust on the floor. Preachers, listen, it's easy for a preacher to preach on hell when it's 110 degrees out in the tabernacle. Woo! Man, it's like, God, I can feel it. I got to go, you know. Sometimes we prey on people's emotions. I've been to a hell house before. You know what those are? Halloween time. It's coming up Halloween time. Hell house is one of those deals where you come in and rather than a haunted house, it's a scary place and they scare the hell out of you is what they're trying to do. And can I say that? It's, boy, if that's not edited right, we're in trouble. Anyway, But that's what they're trying to do. And I've had that scared out of me so much so. And sometimes we can pray on emotions. I used to think "Just As I Am," the hymn, had 20 verses because we just sang, "Let's sing it again." And it's like, and I've been there. I know, listen, I'm not taking the emotion out, but here's what I am saying, is that if you get saved because of your emotion, often when the emotion goes, the commitment goes. Okay? And so if we can get, and so we've got to be careful that it's not just a matter of our emotions, but that it's a matter of we think through it. Yeah, I want this. See, here's the thing. I don't see Jesus or Paul. It's not a big tactic of theirs to scare people into heaven. I don't think we have to do that. Matter of fact, Paul said, we've not been given a spirit of fear or timidity, but of power. And the reality is that I don't think God wants to scare you into following him. Here's what I think. I think that we've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. I think all of us have failed. All of us at times in our lives have been selfish. Every one of us at a time in our lives have thought of us instead of others. And we've put ourselves first. And often we've hurt other people. We've damaged other people. We've broken other people because of that. All of us have sinned and all of us have fallen short. And so Jesus came so that we could be forgiven, so that we could turn from following ourselves and we could turn and follow him, so that we could know what it means to be forgiven, but not just forgiven. Listen, asking Jesus Christ to, you know, forgive you of your sins is, we talk about repentance, that's a turning, right? I'm turning and I'm following him. It's, I want to be like him. I want to be, it's about being transformed. Because if you think I got saved and I got my ticket punched, that's what it's all about, that's not what it's all about. Discipleship is following him, becoming like him, living like him, living into everything that he taught us in this book, to live into, to become like, to have him transform us. Or like that song said, I want to be changed. I want to be different. I want to be more like you. Because here's the thing, you know this, right? You know, whether you believe in God or not, you know this, that we live in a broken world and we need a Savior. And the fact of the matter is, you and I recognize, and that's the thing, that's the hard part. See, it's all free. Jesus did it for us. It's a free gift, salvation is. Here's the hard part. We got to admit that what he says about us is right. That I am broken. And that I am sinful. And that I do my own thing. And that sometimes I don't care about you or them or anybody. And so he's right. And I can't save myself. I can't be good enough. That's the hard part. It's for me to admit that I can't be good enough. I hate it when people die and people say, well, he was a good person. Listen, do not tell people that I am a good person when I die. Now, some of you went, well, I wasn't going to do that anyway, because I hope you tell them, I don't know about Pastor, anything else but this, is that he trusted in Christ. What Christ did on the cross was for him. And he's forgiven, not because of who he is, but because of the God he believed in. And that's what I want for you. That ought to be, that's easy for all of us. It ought to be that God transforms us and he changes us. But if you're going to head down this path, you need to think about it. It needs to not just be, yes, your emotions are involved, but it needs to be not just, it needs to be a decision of your mind. It needs to be a decision of your will. It needs to be a decision of your heart. I will follow Jesus. And if you're going to go all in, don't go all in on following me. Don't go all in on following Luann. Don't go all in on following Matthew or Sean. Go all in on following Jesus. We sing that song, right? I will not sing. It would clear the building. I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back. That's a decision. You have to make that decision that you're going to do that in order to go all in. Here's another thing. That decision has to be punctuated. Elisha turned his plow into a bonfire, and he killed and cooked his oxen. I had never had eaten oxen before, but he barbecued it and fed it to the whole neighborhood. The place where he lived in the English is translated Dancing Meadows. So Dancing Meadows Barbecue was born right there. He killed the animals, and he literally cooked his old way of life and had it for dinner. There was no going back. There weren't going to be any options. There weren't going to be any plan B. He's like, I'm all in. The best way to fully ensure that when you've committed yourself to give yourself completely to something, to make sure that you don't go back, is to sometimes do away with your options. Make the options not so viable anymore. We know this, right? Right? Because if you're an alcoholic, what will AA tell you? You don't even take one drink. Right? If you're a drug addict, I mean, you just can't have one hit. You can't do that one, because once you're going to be back in it, right? We know this from the world. We know that's how the world works. It works that way in our lives as well. We need to take the options out. Do you know how Luann and I have stayed married for 35 years? We're hoping for 36, but I don't know. It's because I told her divorce was not an option. I wouldn't let her do it. Right? That's how you stay married. Divorce is not an option. We made a promise to each other and to God, and we're going to keep it. It's not an option for us. I hate it when I hear couples saying, well, this is an option. This may be what we do. Make a commitment. Burn the ships. You know, you don't just put a... In your life with God, when you come to your life with God, you don't just in your life put a period. You don't just put a comma. You put an exclamation point. You turn the page. We're done with that chapter. We're moving ahead to the next chapter. You got to do something. You've got to punctuate it. Listen, this is what Jesus said. Jesus was talking about following him and being a disciple, and here's what he said. Anyone who puts a hand to the plow and then looks back is not fit for the kingdom. It would have been great if he'd have said, anyone who doesn't burn his plow, eat his oxen, barbecued, and give them to everybody, can't follow me. But that's what he said. You can't keep looking over your shoulder. When you follow him, you can't be, because here's the thing. If you keep looking over your shoulder, the enemy's going to use that to distract you. He's going to use that to divert you. If you keep your plan B option out there, he's going to use it on you. He's going to bring it up to you all the time. So one time I was a counselor at youth camp and had this kid named Kenny. And the people from Kenny's church told me, they said, he's kind of a handful to handle. God bless you. We'll be praying and fasting for you this week. And they left him with me at camp. He was a handful. And one of the things that, and this was his estimate, this is what he said to me. I'm addicted to cigarettes and I can't quit. And I said, well, you know, this is smoke-free campus. And we'd already snuck some into the cabin. And so I said, you need to give me your cigarettes. So he came, gave me two packs of cigarettes, and he said, what are you going to do with them? I said, I'm going to go out here and smoke them. No, I didn't. I said, I'm going to go flush them down the toilet. He said, whoa. He said, I get kind of crazy when I don't, you know, have my cigarettes. He said, you mind, you know, hanging on to these? I said, no, dude, I'm going to flush them. So I went and flushed him, and Kenny was okay. The second night at camp, he went down to the altar and had an experience with God, gave his heart and life to Christ, and became a follower of Jesus. So excited and proud of him. We got back to the cabin. He had another pack of cigarettes he gave me. He said, I held these out on you. And what are you going to do with them? I'm going to flush them. Okay. And so flushed those cigarettes. Well, that was so Wednesday, everything was kind of, I don't know, he was, you know, when you're addicted to nicotine, I mean, he was shaking, he was irritable more than, you know, normal, and so I could tell he was really having a hard time all day Wednesday. Thursday morning, I noticed he got up before everybody was out of the cabin, and then Thursday, he seemed like he was much better. Yeah, right? So this is an important part of being a sponsor at youth camp, right, you know, is that you got to be a little smarter than the kids, and so that night after dinner, I followed Kenny out into the woods. Kenny, he had cigarettes in baggies stuck in trees, dotted around the campus. And Thursday morning, he got up and he had been smoking cigarettes all day for his nicotine thing. And when I caught him, I said, Kenny, man, I said, I thought we talked about this, that God could help you with this. And he said, man, Pastor, he said, I didn't think that I could kick it. He said, but I guess it's really hard to follow God when you got a plan B, huh? I said, yeah, it is, Kenny. Had a guy, him and his family visited our church, and His father had recently passed away, and his father meant a lot to him, and wasn't but a couple of weeks after they visited, he and I had a long conversation, and he accepted Christ, and what Jesus did for him on the cross, became a follower of Jesus. A couple of years go by, and his dad meant quite a bit to him, and he often talked about his dad, but a couple of years after he accepted Christ, he came and talked to me. He said, "Pastor," he said, I'm struggling." He said that I'm kind of stuck. I'm not becoming more like Jesus like I have been. I'm not growing. I pray. And so we talked and we asked him about, you know, other spiritual disciplines. Was he reading the Word? Was he, you know, hanging out with fellow believers in small group and that stuff? And he's, "Yeah, I am." I said, "Is there anything that you're doing that you know God doesn't want you to do?" He said, "No, I'm cool there, Pastor. I got that covered." He said, I said, "Well, let me ask you something. Is there anything that God's asked you to do and you failed to follow through on it?" He got real quiet. He said, "You know, when my dad died 3 years ago," he said, "I got some of his stuff." And he said, "I've got a trunk in my basement. And in that trunk, I have my dad's collection of Playboys." And he says, "Some of them are very valuable." He said he's got like a, you know, he's just got a whole bunch of them. And I knew this guy had trouble with pornography. And one of the things he'd done when he gave his heart and life to Christ was to throw out his own magazines. And I said, "So what's the deal? What's God been telling you about that?" He said, I go down and look at them every once in a while. And he said, "And God's told me that I need to get rid of those too. But I'm having a hard time because that's one of the few things I've got left from my dad." And he said, "I'm just having a real difficult time getting rid of that stuff." Well, we talked about it, and we talked about how the Lord, you know, God being the Lord of his life, he needed to punctuate that and do what God asked him to do, and things would be different. I still remember the phone call I got. He said, "Pastor," he said, "we just had a bonfire in the backyard." He said, "I went out and got a barrel, put all the Playboys in there, and we burned them today." He said, "I'm all in, Pastor. There's no looking back." You looking over your shoulder? Maybe you started out with God and you're still looking back. Maybe there's something you're hanging on to God's told you to get rid of. Maybe there's something God's told you to do you're not doing. You all in? Here's the last thing. Not only in your life and mine do we need to, you know, need to make sure that we make a decision and decide and think on it. Not only do you and I need to make sure that we punctuate it with getting rid of anything and burning our bridges, you also have to humble yourself. There's a little thing right at the end of this passage that we sometimes miss. It says that Elisha went with Elijah as his assistant. And that seems like a really simple statement, like no big deal. What he went was as his apprentice to study and learn from him. That means that although he was going to be the next lead prophet, he wasn't going to be the lead prophet for a while. And so he had to be the understudy. Do you know how long he was the understudy? 18 years. I mean, that would be like me saying, "You know what? Pastor Nicole's going to take over for me. She's going to be the new lead pastor. And then I stay for 18 more years." Probably not too spiffy. You know how hard that would have been? I mean, imagine his parents. They're like going, "Oh, he's the understudy to the prophet. What does he do for?" "Well, he makes Elijah's breakfast. He cleans up after him, keeps his calendar," that kind of stuff. You have to have a lot of humility to do that. It requires a lot of humility to go all in with God. Because you know what it means? He's in control and you're not. But if you're going to be all in, you got to let him have the wheel. When God calls us to do something, so often we try to make it happen ourselves. We all want to do great things for God when we follow him, right? We don't want to be insignificant. We want to do amazing things. But that's his job, not ours. He chooses how he uses us. He chooses the task that we have to take. If we're going to be all in, it means we've got to consecrate ourselves to him. There's a great verse, one of my favorite books in the Bible is Joshua. And when they're getting ready to go in, to possess the promised land, God says this to them: "Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do amazing things among you." God will do amazing things among you. Our job is to humble ourselves, consecrate ourselves, go all in with him, to live humbly every day and allow him to do amazing things through us. It's really hard sometimes. Because God's, I don't know if you've noticed this or not, God's timetable and mine don't always hook up. They don't always sync. But to be able to turn the control over to him and say, you see the bigger picture, you know what's going on. Jeremy mentioned a verse today, right? Paul says, this is not my life I live, but Christ who lives in me. And it's, I don't have control. I am humbly at his. It's a simple recognition that every second of time, every cent of money, everything that I possess, all that I am belongs not to me, but it's to him. And I'm all in when I give all of it to him. And I'm not all in when I hold back something of myself. You can't be all in and be all about you. The only way to be all in is to be all about him. And it's not a place of arrogance, it's a place of humility. But when we do it, we can know, hang on, because tomorrow God will do great things amongst us. I think sometimes in the church, we try too hard to do it ourselves, think of it ourselves, come up with it ourselves, program it ourselves, make it happen ourselves. When what God calls us to do is simply humbly give ourselves to him and be all in and let him do the amazing things amongst us. Are you all in? I'm going to have Jeremy come up and we're going to sing a song in just a moment. The song says, all to Jesus, I surrender. And we're going to sing it this morning because here's the thing. I think when we worship like this, this isn't to pull the drawstring, you know, to pull strings on your heart and manipulate this morning. Here's the thing. The essence of worship this morning is I surrender everything to him. But here's the question I have for you as we sing this morning. Can you truly say you've surrendered it all? Can you sing this song honestly and say, God, it's all yours? Maybe there's some of us this morning, maybe you're not a follower of Jesus and you never committed your life to him. And this morning, you've decided, I want what he's done for me. I want my life to be what he wants it to be. I want to enjoy everything that he created me to enjoy and be everything that he created me to be. And yes, I need him to heal me. And yes, I need him to work through me and in me. But I'm his. I've decided I'm going to follow Jesus. Maybe today's the day to say, Lord, I'm yours. Maybe this morning, if you're a follower of Jesus, and maybe life sometimes starts junking things up, doesn't it? And things start cluttering our life with God. And sometimes other things get in the way. And maybe this morning, you can think of some stuff in your life that's been getting in the way. And maybe this morning, you need to have a bonfire. And you need to say, God, here it is, it's yours. I lay it down. Here's my oxen. Here's my plow. I give it all to you. I'm having a bonfire. No turning back. No turning back. I'm going all the way. I'm surrendering to you. And God, I'm not leaving the options open. I'm all in. I'm not going to hang on to that plan B. I'm not going to hang on. Some of us hang on to a hurt so we won't ever get hurt again. Some of you need to have a bonfire this morning. You need to burn that hurt. Because the way to not get hurt again, I don't know about that, but I know that in that hurt, the way is to trust Jesus, not hang on to a past hurt. I know this morning some of us are like going, you know what, I got this stuff, this is all mine, and we're struggling to make ends meet. And part of the way that Luann and I for all these years, 35 years, have made ends meet is that we've let him do it. Some of you need to let him do it. Some of you got family issues. You need to let him do it. You quit trying to fix it, and you need to let him. Some of us this morning just need to humbly bow and say, God, I'm not in control, but you are. Take me. My life is yours. I'm surrendering it all. Some of us keep looking over our shoulder. Maybe it's time to face ahead and see what God has for you. Don't worry about what's back there. God will take care of it. I surrender all. Can you sing that this morning, honestly? And this morning, if you say, man, Pastor, I need to have a bonfire today. I need to go all in. I need to burn the ships. Then what a great place today to make a place of prayer this morning. We're going to pray here in a minute after we sing this. But I want to give you an opportunity. Come down front. If you don't know Jesus, if you haven't embraced him and a follower of him, just say, Lord, I'm turning away from my way and I'm coming your way. Forgive me for my sins. You're the Lord of my life. If you got stuff you need to lay down and burn, just give it to him this morning. Leave it down here at the altar today. Let's surrender it all, because you know what? Who knows what God can do through a church and a people and a church family that is completely and totally sold out to him? A people, a group, a family that's all in. Will you stand with me this morning? Father, as we sing this song right now, will you help us to sing it honestly? And if we can't sing it honestly, will you help us to find a place of prayer, surrender today? These aren't just words. We want this to be the testimony of our heart today, that we give it all up to you this morning. We surrender it all. While Pastor Jeremy sings, I invite you to come and make a place of prayer at the altar this morning.